This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, and this is the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9. The Game. Mike, Bo, and Tiff here with you, live, as usual, in the Kia Studios. Good morning, gentlemen.
What up, Tiff?
You guys prepared for this this weather that is supposed to be rolling through? Did you go to the grocery store yesterday? Did you get everything you need?
No. I mean, I have some stuff. I have a deep freezer full of meat because I'm the meat man.
Yeah, so I should be good there. You?
Well, I'll just unfreeze it and cook it.
What else do you need?
I guess you need
same thing
you
need at the grocery store.
This is true.
Yeah, I mean,
I do have fire.
I don't have fire.
Although I do need some charcoal, probably. So you might have a point there. I'm probably running low, but I got a Blackstone too that I can. I got a pellet grill, so I got plenty of. I can get some fire going.
I feel like you would be that. I don't know. Like,
no,
if stuff was popping off, I'd probably maybe would go to your house because there'd probably be supplies.
So if you'd be mistaken, I grew up.
I'm not saying you wouldn't.
The Gulf Coast.
That wasn't
of Florida.
Eliminating you.
No, I didn't take it that way. I'm just saying I grew up on the Gulf Coast of Florida. I'm used to this. Like, I was built for this along the way. So I dealt with this my whole life.
You're built for this?
Yeah, I was built for this. Yeah. I dealt with this my whole life.
Does that mean
up,
you have reserves? Like,
what do you mean? Reserves for what?
For what?
What do you mean? In case you don't eat for a few days.
Oh.
Got some canned goods?
No, man. I'm just saying, like, you know, got the generator gassed up and everything
else.
You
have a nice generator, actually.
Well, you know what, man? I live in a neighborhood that seems to lose power quite often, to be real with you. So it's imperative that a generator has to happen.
The wind could blow, and my building loses power.
Yeah, same.
Well,
I mean, same.
Yeah, that's the one thing I love about my neighborhood is it's just new enough that we have underground power.
Mine is new, but the problem is you just throw up these buildings now these
days.
Yeah,
I know. I will say this, that's probably as good a compliment as you're going to get from me, Mike, that you have a nice generator, because I don't speak lightly about other men's generators, but...
I was going to say, I feel like that's a very manly...
It is. It is. He's got a nice one. What do you want to say?
Manly thing
it's one of those quiet ones, Tiff, you know what I'm saying? Just hums at you.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, no, honestly, it's not like it's a gigantic generator, but it's enough to keep the fridge turned on. And it is what it is, man. So,
especially when you have kids, I imagine.
Dude, it just, you know what's the most, like, here's a little insight. Just here, I plug like five items in, right? I plug the fridge in. And then probably two fans and then the sound machines in my kids' rooms. Like, that's of the utmost importance. Nothing else seems to matter other than those five things, man. So, yeah, we'll hold it down at our house for sure.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured? Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Your lucky shirt yesterday.
Yeah, I had to, and I've switched it up today. I went to the other one because I got two of them. Because, you know, you don't want to they'll start smelling, but
you wore
do
a
have
lucky...
two of those.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, you do. That's
they're different.
You got two Braves short sleeve hoodies.
Well, so he wore one of his Braves shirts yesterday, mm-hmm. or hoodie, short sleeve hoodies. He's got the other one on today, and maybe you had something to do. Probably not.
No, I had nothing to do with it.
Their 5-1 win over the Mets.
I'm a little upset that they won yesterday, and you didn't wear the same one.
Well, I just thought it was kind of.
Oh.
I had to wear the same one back in here. I just figured I'd rotate them. They've both been. They've both done well in their time.
Yeah. Mike likes to shame people for their,
Well, put it this way.
Possible outfits. Or was that Day-Day that shamed me?
Yeah, it wasn't me.
I think Day-Day shamed me because I wore the same.
I'm the last person to shame somebody over an outfit. I can tell you that.
It was Day-Day. I confused my...
I am not what you would call fashion forward.
Well, Mike, are you superstitious? Is that
100%.
What I'm getting for you? Oh, okay.
100%. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me right now?
Yeah. You have a Braves hat on. What did you wear yesterday?
I got a red bobber hat today. I wore a camo hat. Mike has a race hat. Yeah, you're right. I wore a camo. I wore my Buckhead Butcher Shop hat yesterday. It went. I like it. I like it goes better because that other Braves. That other Braves. Hoodie was is the it's like the ATL Connect color scheme. So it's like the Hank Aaron color scheme.
Yeah.
And this is more traditional. This is a 100-game winning hoodie, by the way. Because they won 100 games of this last year.
To Tiff's point, I had this hat on yesterday, and I'm wearing this hat again today because, you know, I think that you have to have continuity in this game.
Well, I'm wearing shoes, underwear, and a Braves hoodie again. So, I mean,
I don't know.
You got Braves underwear on?
I don't know what Michael Harris or Money Mike is doing, if he's doing the continuity thing with the outfit, maybe lucky socks, but whatever it is, it's working. He hit three hits yesterday, including a solo home run.
Out to left field, pretty deep. That's going to keep going, and it's going to get out of here. Michael Harris, a single, a double, and now a homer, and it's only the fourth inning.
It was only the fourth. That was Brandon Godden on the call, courtesy Valley Sports.
Yeah, triple away from the cycle. That's as impressive as a home run as I've seen from Michael Harris because of where it went. He went 422 feet to left field. He went oppo on that one. That wasn't even the most impressive thing he did last night. The most impressive thing he did if you want to really get down to it, was the catch he made against a little Acuna, which is Ronald Acuna Jr., Jr.'s little brother.
I know. It's just
because I don't know if it's Luis Angel, but I think that's how you pronounce his name. But you can call him Louie, or you can call him Little Acuna. I call him Little Acuna because he's baby Acuna.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, but he was. But all
that sounded so Ricky Bobby Ricky. It was just.
Well, I couldn't. I couldn't. Baby when Tua's brother first came up and was at Alabama and he was being recruited, I called him Baby Tua because it was. I didn't want to butcher his name, and because his name is a little bit
Talia.
Yeah, it's a little bit it's longer than that, right? That's just how they. That's the shortened version of it, right?
Not that I know of.
But anyways, so I did not pronounce it, so I call him Baby Tua. What Harris did last night, going 3-for-4, to me wasn't the most impressive thing the Braves had last night, as far as performances.
Schwellenbach,
Schwelly,
without a doubt,
Schwelly. Yeah. Go ahead and talk to us about it.
He was dealing. He threw seven pitches in the first inning. He did grind a little bit in the second inning, but that said. Look, I think we need to talk about the truth with this. Is this was not a ho-hum performance. This is one of the hottest teams in baseball, was what the Mets came in at. They just took, 3-4, I think, from the Phillies. Schwellenbach, 7 innings of 3-hit ball. He only struck out 4, only walked 1. He did give up the home run in the 7th, but he only threw like 87 pitches last night, and 62 of those were strikes. He was utterly dominant.
Yeah. Well, and I think just as big a deal as what the pitch count is, specifically for a guy like that, is the fact that you get through 7 innings when he's been a guy that, you know, he can give you 5 with 1 earned, and that's kind of been a good start for him. He gets through 7 last night with that low pitch count, really saves the bullpen. And I'll be honest, I don't know how big of a deal it is that he saved the bullpen with the impending weather, but otherwise, in a series like this, and when you're really putting all arms forward towards the end of the year, that's a massive start for him to step into that situation and cover as much ground as he did in terms of going top to bottom of that Mets roster.
And we talked to the legend John Smoltz on our show yesterday, and he expected this from Schwellenbach. He also told us that this game against the Mets was going to be like a game 7, and Schwellenbach had the same approach.
I mean, the juices were definitely flowing. We got 5 more games left. Need every single one of them. This is basically the playoffs starting now for us. So we need wins, and that's what we did tonight.
Yeah, it's exactly the way he pitched. It's the way they hit. The crowd at Truist last night, it felt like a playoff game atmosphere. The best thing that I've heard about Spencer Schwellenbach was Brian Snitker yesterday on the Steakhouse. And he talked about how impressed he was with him. But then Snitker goes, and I've always been enjoyed and been impressed with Steak as an interviewer, but Steak pressed him a little bit, and he's like, I don't know. Hell, I didn't even know who he was. Hey, you mean, he goes, he was an A-ball guy. Because I didn't even know who he was when he came to spring training with us.
Yeah, why would he, honestly?
And guess what? You didn't know, and you didn't know, and Dylan didn't know, and Dana didn't know, and I didn't know who Spencer Schwellenbach was in March and in February. And none of you in your cars did, unless you just really love reading about prospects, which there's probably a couple of guys out there that they did. But if you're going to sit here and tell me that you knew Spencer Schwellenbach would be to me, the second best pitcher since July in this rotation, then you're a flat out liar in all capital letters. It has been unbelievable. And this guy didn't get called up, guys, to like the beginning of June.
It's an incredible and really good feel-good story in baseball. You mentioning that, you know, Snit didn't know, none of us knew. But Snit, being around him now throughout the season, he definitely knows now.
I mean, he's kind of getting like one of those guys that's not going to surprise me ever. And the situation and how he handles himself, the game doesn't speed up on him. He's probably more pissed that he didn't make a couple of those plays than anything.
After hearing Snit talk there, after hearing Snit talk on the Steakhouse, Mike, if this team was to make the playoffs, Snit said something. First off, don't even think about how they line this rotation up for this series. But he said, yeah, you know, you always feel good when you get in a series when you got guys like Sell and Fried and Schwellenbach going.
Yeah, and honestly, it kind of makes me sick to my stomach because 3 or 4 days ago, I'm sitting here looking at how it lines up with the, you know, hopefully impending playoffs and everything else. Then the weather coming in is going to throw everything into a straight-up cyclone for the next few days for the Braves. And the thought of them having their entire season on the line on a possible doubleheader on a Monday with the pitching situation that could bring forth makes me kind of sick. But with that being said, that's when you need guys like a Spencer Schwellenbach to step into that situation and get it done. So I don't know, man. And I don't think the Snicker can say enough good things, but I'm with him when I say that I don't know that I'm even surprised anymore at what Schwellenbach does. He's so cool, calm, and collected. I think after two starts, we had John Smoltz on, and he was saying the same things. And here we are, you know, months later, still talking about that kind of persona and the attitude that a guy like that brings onto the hill. He just has that young swagger about him to where it's not like, you know, rookies come up and they're all energetic and they're gritty and it's like, you know, fist pump and everything else. And he has some of that emotion. But, man, he has learned in short order to kind of keep that in check in these big situations.
If something happened where you had to push everything back and you had to play some kind of doubleheader on Monday or even a game on Monday, the thing I'll say is that Ronaldo Lopez threw off the mound yesterday. He's eligible, whether he's ready or not, he's eligible to come off on Thursday. Maybe you could get him some type of work, whether what a simulated game or whatever. And if you did make the postseason, if you happen to be there, he might have to be the guy that would start for you on a Tuesday game.
Well, let's hope this tropical storm Helene doesn't make a significant impact in what happens with this ball game. It's supposed to get hit hard, tonight into Thursday and Friday. Hopefully things might be clear for your weekend with this Alabama-Georgia matchup. You can bet the Dogs left no stone unturned. But how much can they lean on the experience of playing Bama in SEC championship last year? We'll discuss next on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I. com.
The game. We are just a few days away from Alabama and Georgia. I know you are the resident Roll Tide person in the building. Are you the only one?
What do you mean?
In this building?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think so. I know they're, what's our buddy's name in sales that is a Bama guy?
Barla. John Parla.
I'm talking about the younger kid.
Oh, yeah. I call him Max Fried.
Yeah, Max Fried.
Yeah. He looks like Max Fried. Good kid.
Parla he's an adopted Bama member, though. His kids go there, so yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that's all right. I'll hold the fort down. It's okay.
All right. I know we've talked a lot about how they are going to have to prepare to face Jalen Milroe, who they saw in last year's SEC championship game. Carson Beck, though, really tearing it up this season. I know you had some of his numbers, Bo.
Well, he's played well in two weeks ago against Kentucky. They kind of struggled, and I think a lot of that was the offensive line. He played now in this game last year because I went through Tiff and we were kind of throwing out things about what's the difference in these two teams last year. There's a lot of differences, and what's the one something that that Georgia could hang their hat on last year against this Alabama defense, which is different in a lot of ways. But this is these are two really talented defenses that we're going to see going toe to toe Saturday night in Tuscaloosa. But Carson Beck was extremely efficient. Last year in the SEC Championship game, he was 21 of 29 for 243 yards. Now, he didn't have any touchdowns in this game throwing the ball, and he did have one rushing. But to me, Carson Beck is going to have to do a good job of when things aren't there. Can he keep plays alive with his legs? Because I think Carson Beck is so undervalued as far as a scrambler and a runner at times.
So where does Coach Kirby Smart then see the improvement when it comes to Beck? Here's Coach.
I think he's done a better job this year with his legs. He's decided to run on multiple occasions when he's needed to. I'm sure he would say he'd like to have some throws back, but three games in last year, he felt the same way. There's some throws he'd like to have back. So I've seen a lot of Carson to know that he's in a good headspace. He's a really good quarterback. Got a lot of confidence in him.
Oh, wait a minute now. See, Mike, with stuff like this happens when you hear Kirby Smart validate what Bo just said, and Bo's like, I didn't even know that this cut existed.
Yeah.
And if that is true, well, it's kind of nauseating that he's
I didn't know.
I agree with you, but let's not act like Bo came up with the idea that Carson Beck scrambles right now.
No, we're not.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
We didn't invent the concept of watching Carson Beck use his legs.
You think Rusty Manziel's the only one that's tight with Kirby? I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
And Kirby, we tight.
But I think it's a valid point. And look, I think that Bama, for the most part in last year's SEC title game, did a good job of kind of keeping Carson Beck from being able to scramble and kind of swarming in the backfield. And on the flip side, man, the matchup that you'll see with Jalen Milroe, I mean, he is a scrambler, and I think he did a lot more scrambling last year than he has done this year because they have had more designed run plays out of Jalen Milroe. So I think Carson Beck's done such a nice job of taking care of the football. That's what I would kind of highlight. They might be, I think, one of only two offenses in the country still that don't have that turnover. When you talk about Georgia's offense, I think that goes back to the leadership that he displays at the quarterback spot. And I think that Bama's going to have their hands full trying to get in the backfield and affect him this weekend.
Should be some good quarterback play from both sides. And I'm glad you brought up Milroe because Kirby Smart talked about what it's like preparing for him. And it's not an easy task.
Yeah, if you could simulate this guy, then he would be in the transfer portal somewhere because he would be playing. You know, like he would be on a team somewhere playing because there is no simulation. I think that's the problem. He can go as fast backwards as he can go forward. I've seen him get out of jams, straight ahead, backwards, elite quickness. When you see him in person on the field, he's very thick and very hard to tackle, but yet has a bazooka for an arm.
He sounds like he's talking about playing NFL blitz. You know, he used to backpedal. Like, he used to play NFL blitz and backpedal as fast as you could, then chunk it up in the air. That's what Kirby sounds like he's talking about. No, but I think it's true. I think that Jalen Milroe, look, I'm not going to sit here and act like he's the Heisman Trophy winner right now. He definitely does have some deficiencies in his game. I think that even, you know, most people with crimson-colored glasses like myself would point to the fact that the middle passing game, the over-the-middle stuff, the crossing routes and everything else haven't been exactly tearing it up this year. But with his legs and his agility, he is definitely dynamic. And they have – Kalen DeBoer and his staff have leaned into that more than I think Tommy Reese and Nick Saban did last year of saying, look, man, let's empty out the backfield. Let's run a counterplay up front and let's see if anybody can stop him when we've, you know, completely emptied the box. Let's go five wide and line up the receivers as close to the sideline as we possibly can. And then let's take Jalen Milroe right down the middle and see if anybody can tackle him.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's one of those things where, oh, they're in man, that middle's open, bye, take off. You see this, if you drop back and you see the middle of the field open, why are you, what are you doing other than running? You're not. You're running. Go get your 7, 8, 10. And as fast and as athletic as he is, he can get down, Mike, after a 7, 8-yard gain, and that's a chunk play. In a run game, that's what you want. I like the fact that they've leaned into it. I was listening, I think it was Cole Kublik talk about this game a couple weeks ago after the Wisconsin performance, and he's like, basically just kind of and saying a lot of what you just said, who cares if you're not throwing across the middle efficiently, as efficiently as you want to be, I don't care.
Yeah.
Take the run play or take the big chunk because he's so good down the field, and now he's got, honestly, a guy that at the end of the season we're going to talk about being one of the three best receivers in college football, I think, and that's Ryan Williams.
Yeah, and they've got a pretty good receiving core that I don't think a lot of people expected them to have. Kendrick Law, Jeremy Bernard, other guys like that. I get asked the question a lot, how is Georgia going to defend, you know, Jalen Milroe in this new style Alabama offense? I don't think there's one right answer. I think you have to do everything. I think you have to have some man and zone mix. I think you have to have a spy. I think you have to have a double spy. I think you rush three. I think you bring six. I think you try to confuse the running backs in the backfield and blitz pick up. I don't think there's one singular answer. I think that everything has to be different, play in and play out. It's not like you're just going to go, well, we're going to stay in nickel, run a 4-2 front, and just see what happens. Nah, man, you got to be able to mix it up when you have a quarterback that's that dynamic with their legs. Otherwise, you know, you run man coverage, run everybody off, and Jalen Milroe takes off and picks up 30. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of that chess match of how each of these quarterbacks is defended because they are both so good at what they do.
There's another element in all this that really no one can prepare for, and that's Tropical Storm Helene that's moving in. Of course, away from the game, you hope everybody stays safe that is in the eye or in the surrounding area of this storm, but it possibly could have an impact on Georgia travel plans. Mike, I want to ask you a question, but first I want to hear what Kirby Smart has to say about how it could affect what they do.
Yes, I understand it, and we've been following it and watching it. Listen, our in-house people in Delta, it looks like it's trending more and more eastward, which may affect us, but less and less effect towards the game. My biggest concern is the travel and our travel arrangements. Being able to get there in a convenient way is my concern right now.
So as a player, former player, Mike, and I don't know if you've dealt with it just on the college level or if you dealt with it NFL-wise, hurricane storms this time of year, how does it impact the preparation when you're trying to maybe even get to your location?
Well, I think it all depends on when the storm's going to hit, right? And I think if you're Kirby Smart, and he mentioned Delta right there, you know, he's probably calling up Ed Bastian or somebody like that. Listen, and I joke, but Nick Saban has definitely done that before. I know that Kirby probably has too, where you call up Delta and you go, look, what can we do here? I think the thing you might see from Georgia, I think it's a little bit frightening, is that maybe you leave a day early or something like that, or you know, you have to get over there and do your walkthrough a day early or whatever it may be. I think that that's one of the things that will get you out of pocket, although I think the leadership in Kirby and Carson Beck is good enough to not let that affect you too much. But this is something that every single year this happens, right? And I distinctly remember, I think it was actually my first collegiate game, and we were playing maybe Tulane or Southern Miss or somebody that was affected by Hurricane Katrina at the time. And we didn't even stay in our team hotel the night before on campus because we were leaving those rooms free for people that were evacuating. And it was like, dude, it was my very first game. And they're like, hey, by the way, you're staying at the dorm this week. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's cool. This happens, unfortunately, more times than people understand. I just think when the microscope is on the game like this, and you wonder kind of what the backup plan. I think the backup plan right now would be for Kirby and this team to get out a little bit early and to make sure they're settled in wherever they need to be west of where this storm looks like it might go, and so they can kind of settle in and get mentally prepared and not have to worry about all the logistics behind it.
Yeah, and then you get to the game and which team can handle a wet, sloppy field better. You know, that's kind of the thing. I just go back to this game last year, and I remember I think we might have been playing the Jets the next day, and Arch and I were watching a game in Jersey together. And I just don't – it's so rare that you see two teams that are so fast to their perimeter defenses getting to the edge. Neither team could run outside on either one. It was just so ridiculous how well. Now, this game could end up being kind of a little bit if the weather is bad, it could be one of those little, you know, low-scoring games. And I think you have to go to home field. And I just think because I do believe Jalen Milroe, as well as I talked about Carson Beck's legs, is a better quarterback with his legs. If he protects the football, I think the advantage would go slightly to Alabama.
I don't know if it's that easy because I think you do rely on Jalen Milroe's legs. I don't know if Jalen Milroe is a great runner. He's not great at change of direction, in my opinion. And so I think that the change of direction thing, when it is a wet and sloppy field, plays into the dynamic. If he does get loose and tries to stick his foot in the ground, is he going to have his footing? And if he can't do that and he starts to second-guess his footing and he's not scrambling the way he has in the past, does the advantage go to Carson Beck in Georgia? Because they are not a scrambling team. They are a team that's going to try to run the ball right down in the middle of the field. And Bama has struggled at times this year stopping plays like that up the middle against South Florida and Wisconsin. So I don't know. I don't know who the advantage lies to in that situation.
This is one of those games, if I was doing sideline, they'd be telling me, go look at the players' cleats. Yeah. Go look at the cleats.
Go pick up a clump of grass, Tiff. Are they seven studs or just normal? Yeah.
When we come back here, what is the Falcons' biggest concern as they head into NFC South play, beginning with the Saints? And we'll hit a TB's timeout. I'm doing a residency somewhere. It was misinterpreted, but I'll explain. Stay with us here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. NFC South play is upon us. We have the Saints this weekend facing the Atlanta Falcons. This is always a heated rivalry, as we all know.
Yeah, and it's sure definitely Bo, rivalry week. As
in the NFL?
Yeah, it's for us anyways.
It's kind of in Major League Baseball too. I mean, honestly. I mean, it's the flavor of the week around here for sure.
I feel like no one hates the Saints more than you do.
John Fricke's up there, but yeah, I hate the Saints pretty passionately.
I don't know that I understood exactly how much that existed before I played here, and it was the same way before I got to Alabama about Auburn because I didn't grow up an Alabama fan. And I don't think I understood it until I got there and I was like, wow, like it is real. And then I get to Atlanta and I'm like, wow, it is real. Like it is like people do not like Saints people in the city of Atlanta. And it is definitely the same way, vice versa.
And it's become personal for me with people in their organization. And because look, I understand you want to have fun 28-3 and everything, but every year, there was a fan called in the other day. It was a Sunday. It was a listener called in on a Sunday. I was listening to Fricky. I'm taking sprinkles on our walk, right? And I'm about to leave for Philadelphia. And the guy calls up, starts demanding that John respect the Saints organization. You need to respect the organization and talk about them with respect. And of course, Fricky didn't handle that well, and I don't blame him. And I started thinking about it, and I said, man, I wish I was on the air right now because I would let that dude have it. Will you want me to respect them? How? An organization that runs videos every time we're down there, not poking fun, but deliberately making fun and taking shots of our organization and our city and things that have happened. An organization that has rabbit ears every time anything happens.
Can I jump in here for a second?
Just give me one more. You know, their fans and players and members don't want to demand respect from us. They put a billboard outside of our stadium. You know what? Blank off. You don't get any respect from me. No, there's no respect. I don't have to respect or talk about you like I have respect. I don't, okay? I absolutely don't. Doesn't mean I don't respect guys like Cam Jordan, but I'm not respecting the people up in their organization that want to run those videos and run those little halftime shows that want to mock us when we're down there. You show me no respect, I show you none.
Tiff, I'll let you jump in.
I didn't mean to put coal into the hate engine to allow it to
just a little bit
power
of fuel.
Up.
Yeah, a little bit of fuel. I don't know that your coal was even needed. And Bo, you know. I understand all that. I think, and a lot of Falcons fans do have a bad taste in your mouth about the way the game ended last year. And I realize it was like a Jameis Winston thing, and you know, they come out afterwards and say, yeah, that's not how you do it. That's on us. I don't care, dude.
But doesn't it make sport? This is what makes sports fun, right? Like these.
No. It makes sports fun for the people that are enjoying that part of it. And unfortunately, I've been on both sides of that, and I try to be respectful of the people that are taking the loss because I realize they probably worked just as hard as I did. So, no, that's fun for all the people on the winning side of it. Sure, yeah, you love the fact that you're able to get in a rivalry and embarrass the people across the field. But then, to Bo's point, that's why I don't respect what's going on. So that's fine.
I won't talk about my time living in Louisiana. when the Saints won the Super Bowl. I'm going to pivot here and bounce back to what Mike said. Yeah, last year had probably a bitter taste. It left a very bitter taste in a lot of fans' mouths and probably the team as well. But new coach, new regime, right? Here's Raheem Morris on that game last year.
I don't go with motivation that I wasn't a part of. You know, if you need any more motivation than playing against a division rival for the South, that you got the pen in your hand to be able to write your own story, and you probably in the wrong building anyway. So, like, you know, there's no secret about the Saints, the Bucks, and Carolina, particularly this week. The team that you focus on is better be the Saints, and you got to find a way to go out there and beat a really competitive, well-coached team at our place.
Very matter of fact. I like how he handled that question. I mean, it's the division, right? But also, he wasn't here last year.
Yeah, and the problem is if you're in that locker room and you get emotional and you get angry and you try to think of everything that's happened in the past, it comes out on the field. And we saw last weekend the Eagles players get emotional, and Tyrann Mathieu and all these other guys kind of having those arguments. The emotion gets the best of you. And so I think it's smart for Raheem Morris to say, look, man, this is business as business gets. And I'll be honest with you guys. A lot of times in the NFL, the rivalries are more about the fan bases. I think it's a lot more team fed when it comes to college, because when you go to a college, you're like that guy for life, right? There's some guys in the NFL that are like, I could be playing for the Saints next week.
This is true,
right? And so I think that's a smart approach from Raheem.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but there are some players in this game that absolutely feel that rivalry. You don't think Tyrann Mathieu has been who's from that area, played college ball down there and has been a part, doesn't have some feeling that. Alvin Kamara, who went to high school here but has been a Saint so far for his career, or Taysom Hill, those guys feel that way. I'm going to tell you something. Cam Jordan he has lived this rivalry. I mean, he has been a huge part of it. And I think Marshawn Lattimore is another guy. Now, to your point, Caden Ellis, been on both sides. David Onyemata, been on both sides. So, but I just think there. But that also, I think, fueling their fire, because guess who didn't sign them to contracts? The Saints. So I hope they want to go there and get some get back.
So I made a little social media post yesterday, and I was trying to be clever, but I guess my being clever got lost. And then you're not clever if you have to explain it. Or change your caption. I was going to be beginning my residency in Vegas, like joking, like Usher had a residency. I think Katy Perry's doing one now or something like that. But I have to get to Vegas early. I have the Browns and Raiders, by the way, on Sunday this week, the 4:25 game. And the storm kind of altering some of my travel plans. So I will be living in Vegas for the next couple of days, and as Mike said in our group chat, there could be worse places to be. But I actually think that is the worst place to be when you're not.
What?
When you're not a, I'm not a gambler. I'm not a partier. Basically, when I get to Vegas today, I'll probably go to the gym, and I don't like walking the strip. I did it once just for the experience to say I did it.
Why don't you like walking it?
Too many people. It's like Disney World for adults. Dude, I hate it.
Not far off.
There's nothing you can't do in Vegas.
This is true.
You know what I mean? Like you can't sit here and tell me you'd rather be in Buffalo, New York tomorrow or Boise, Idaho Nebraska. Like, get out of here with that.
I think what I'm getting at is it's the length of time. Like, okay, like Super Bowl week. I was in Vegas for an entire week, and everyone's walking around like, this is too much. Like, a week in Vegas
that's
too much. Yeah. This is basically almost like 5 days, because I'm going to end up being on a red eye coming back. I may, you know what? I may talk to Conti and pop in on you guys on Monday morning, because I'm coming this way anyway.
Live correspondence.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's the length of time. I've had a week to recharge when you're gone a lot, and then it's like, bam, a 5-day trip. You're like,
but it's
literally
the entertainment capital of the world. Like, you can go
You know what? Maybe
you can go hiking.
And you're getting like an extra day.
Well, that's
you're getting an
cut
extra
off
day
today.
There.
Tomorrow, yes. Tomorrow, you're right. Anything, you know what? Kevin Garnett, anything is possible. Anything's possible in Vegas. Should I now become the conventioners? What is it? Convention Bureau? I can't find words this morning. Someone help me out.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think I'm using. I don't think I'm even saying the word right.
The convention centers,
tourism.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe if I knew what you're trying to say.
I'm gonna Google it.
You're doing great.
When we come back here on the morning shift, the Braves. It feels like the playoffs. Certainly, they acted like it yesterday in a win over the Mets. Let's recap that game one next on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.